From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan, announcing show number 203, recorded live Saturday, February 27th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik R80 Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with two Dashsoft employees, programmer Lamiz and senior systems analyst Abir.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here in Cairo, Egypt, in fact, at the German University of Cairo at Cairo Code Camp. It's a two-day event here in Egypt on the weekends, and I'm sitting in one of the rooms here, and you might be hearing people walking by because we're in a very busy university in Cairo, and I've got the opportunity to sit down with two employees of Dashsoft, who is sponsoring me coming here to Cairo. We've got Lamiz, who's a programmer at Dashsoft, is that correct? And then Abir, who is a systems analyst and project manager?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So I thought it would be really interesting to sit down and talk a little bit about you guys and your career, because even though I've traveled around the world and around the Muslim world, I was really impressed with the level of integration of women in technology here in Cairo. It looks like it's about 40 or 50% of this code camp is women. And I say that with shock because 40 or 50% of the population of the world is women, but in the U.S., I'm lucky to see 10 or 20%. This doesn't match in my head. Is this unusual or is this typical in Egypt?
Actually, in the IT community, I think it's typical to find 50-50% of men and women in universities, in conferences, and in companies as well. It's very typical here.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we find women and men all over workplaces. We work together, so it's usually 50-50%. Actually, I find it pretty weird that that's not the case in the U.S. and Europe. It's pretty weird to me.
Now, why do you think that is? Because I think that in the U.S. we discourage women and girls, specifically young women, to get into technical things, to get into math, to get into science, to get into computer and logic.
Yeah, I knew that in Europe and US, women work mostly as secretaries and something like the office work.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get into technologies. They're not. They don't get difficult jobs. But it's weird. I don't know why is that.
Well, let's try to see if we can figure that out, because I think that that's the interesting question of the day. Is this a uniquely Egyptian thing, or is this something about the Muslim world or maybe the Arab world that is, do young fathers encourage their women, their girl child and their boy child similarly towards science and math?
Okay, let me tell you my side of the story. Please. And then we can try to figure it out. In Muslim world, education is very crucial. We are encouraged to be educated on the highest level of education since we are 3 or 5 years old. So we go to private school. There is nothing said about not being able to handle science and mathematics. This is the first time I've heard that from you now. We are always encouraged to study hard, study well, study everything. Personally, I wanted to go to an art school, actually, after I graduated. And the one pushed me to computer science is my father. He insisted on me going to computer science because it's the next booming thing and would provide me with a better career and better income and make me more independent and useful to the community. So we don't have that kind of discrimination or difference. On the contrary, we have to study well and hard to be recognized as to have our parents proud and our families proud. It's the very norm. You can go to engineering schools here and colleges. You will find 50-50% in all levels, mechanics, or engineering, electronics, mm-hmm. and everything. So we don't have this idea here. On the contrary, we need to study hard everything.
Actually, the Egyptian parents are usually very pushy about education. So when someone gets low degrees, they're They're punching them, and so, yeah, and they get frustrated. They're very.
You don't mean actually punching them, but I mean pressuring them to move and.
Oh, yes. And, yeah, and they get sad because of that. So, Egyptian parents are very pushy about education and encouraging people to get higher degrees. Either they are girls or boys.
Mm-hmm. So, do either of you have a brothers or?
Yes, I have. I have a younger brother. Actually.
Okay. So, do you feel that you're being encouraged and pushed towards greatness? I guess is a good way to put it. As equally as your brother?
Yeah, yeah. My father actually always puts me as a role model for my brother, and he wants him to be an engineer or a programmer like me. So
really?
He really encourages him by me.
So the thing that I'm trying to reconcile is I think that for a lot of the listeners who may not necessarily have traveled that much or who have an assumption about, and I think that we also tend to, we as Westerners tend to group, we say Arab world, then Muslim world, and then specific country cultures, you know, because not all of the Arab world is Muslim, although it's assumed, but there's probably 10% Coptic or Christian here. I've met a number of Christians,
yes.
Egyptians here. Then there's the Arab world larger sense. There's the Egyptian kind of, there is a Muslim world, and then there's the Egyptian culture. I'm trying to understand, is it one of these three levels as we kind of peel away the layers that is encouraging? Is this a uniquely Egyptian thing that
no,
I would not
no.
find?
No, actually, it's in the Middle East. All over the Middle East, you find women in many technologies. So it's all over the Middle East. It's not only Egyptian.
Is this a new thing? Is this the new generation? Was it like this in the 60s and 70s?
Or I think yes. It starts from the 80s or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it started from the 50s or something because my grandfather actually made sure that my five aunts went to education, some in Turkey and some in Egypt, and he was living in Kuwait. So he sent them to colleges, and it was the 50s. So I think, no, it started earlier. Now this is the norm. In the 90s and the 80s, this is the absolute norm. Mm-hmm. This is the least you can do.
Wouldn't you say, though, that this is the norm in what we would call moderate Islamic countries? Because the messaging that we hear, the marketing, quote-unquote, the marketing of the Muslim world that a lot of Westerners hear and a lot of Americans hear is this oppression of women happening in the Muslim world. But as we look around us here at the Code Camp, I see, like you say, 40-50% women. I see women with the hijab, with the scarf, women without. Everyone is talking and interacting, sitting together. It's not, the seating area is not in any way segregated. We're eating, we're chatting.
Oh, yeah.
Is this a moderate Arab world thing? There are countries that are not this, progressive.
I agree. I have to agree. Most of the Arab countries are moderate, but some countries are less, but, they are moving towards this direction because it's non-religious, actually. Islam as a religion pushes people to educate their children, boys and girls, and by no means it discriminates between a girl and a boy. So I don't understand how this happened, but I think it's more of a cultural thing than a religious thing, because in our religion, everybody is equal, and that's a must, actually. That's the basic of the religion, that everybody is equal, colors, gender, and nationality, anything. The other thing you said about people interacting with hijab, without hijab, or different religions, this is very common in Arab worlds. And we don't never put this in mind. Whether I'm dealing with a Christian, most of my friends are... I have a lot of friends that are Christian and I have a lot of girlfriends that are not wearing hijab, and this is never an issue because simply there is no compulsion in Islam. So everybody is free to do whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that it is then an overly strict reading of some of the specifics of Islam that have caused some other countries to head in a direction that is a little more conservative? Because I think that maybe people who are listening to this, who may not be familiar with Islam and may not have read the Quran, may feel that, well, that's not what I heard. I heard that you can look up in this chapter in the Quran, and it says that, you know, women must do this, women must do that. I mean, there are things that say what the relationship between a husband and wife should be, and there are sections of the Quran that do discuss about the appropriateness of certain interactions between men and women.
True. But it puts rights on both sides, the man and the woman. It, you will never find a part of Quran that just asks women to do something and not men. That's not true, except for hijab, maybe, because for obvious reasons. But you'll never find that in Quran. Absolutely no way. You will find rules. You will find directions for a better life, a better standards, ethics and stuff, but it applies on both genders. Mm-hmm. You don't find it in a specific way to women.
So this is really interesting. So applying this to the business of software, because I'm talking to a programmer and then a systems analyst, I came to your company and got a tour, and I was kind of impressed and heartened to find you guys working in what I could only describe as kind of a scrum like environment.
It is. It is actually, that's very accurate. It is a scrum project and an agile project. We are leaning very strongly towards agile now and a scrum environment because simply it untightens the communication between the team and relies more on individuals. And it's like a small family in the room. So everyone that has a question or a problem is supported mm-hmm. always. And that's the way we like to work.
Yeah. I would say that I considered myself fairly, enlightened and educated about how the way of the world is. But when I arrived in Egypt and went into a room and found, I think, about 10 people around a room, all working together, co-located, and there was what appeared to be a Kanban board up on the wall. Was that correct?
That's true.
And I'm looking at the post-it saying done, not done, working, and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would have to say that, again, using the lens by which I view the Muslim world as a Westerner, I am surprised to see you guys working literally kind of shoulder to shoulder in this room as we would call it a war room, right? I mean, yeah. It's just like you guys chose to do this to make your project successful. You chose to co-locate. I actually mentioned it to the boss, and he's like, oh, yeah, this is how they want to run this project.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't seem to me like it's compatible with what I understood the way things worked over here. Is this unique to your company, or am I just ignorant?
No, I was just about to say, you will find this in now, you will find it in almost every company, that there is at least one or two projects running on agile methodologies. Everybody's in a room and everybody's working together. I have been to several companies that and worked on projects with the same methodologies
really?
Over the past 2 years.
So, Lemis, as a programmer, have you always worked on agile projects as long as your career, or have you worked in other ways?
No, I usually worked on agile projects. Actually, I'm now transferring into a system analyst, so I'm in a career transfer period.
Yeah, transformation of your career?
Yes. So, but all of my projects were agile too. I think it's way better than the CMMI or something. It's way cooperative between the team members.
Mm-hmm.
Makes everyone helpful to the others.
Mm-hmm. And you found it compatible with the way the culture works. There was no thought like, oh, we're going to work this closely together? We're not going to...
No, please, no. We go together to college, we go together to school, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So we are used to that all of our lives.
How long have you two been in the industry, if you don't mind my asking?
I've been 3 and 5 years now. We're, I think, 7 years a year.
And have you worked at multiple companies or only at Dashsoft?
No, for me, it's only Dashsoft.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in like 5 companies, I think. 5.
Yeah. Wow, in 7 years?
Yeah, in 7 years. I know. It looks bad, I know.
I won't say anything.
Yeah, I don't know.
And have they each been agile, as Lemis's experience has been?
For the past 3 years, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Before it wasn't.
This is a movement. This agile way of managing projects and systems is absolutely global and cross-cultural.
Yeah, exactly. Because it has proven value to everybody. It has proven to work more effectively with clients and with the team, and everybody's happy and content, so why not?
Do you have scrum masters or agile coaches that have come in from either within Egypt or outside of Egypt? Or how did you... each as a systems analyst and then now as a programmer who is transitioning into a role as a systems analyst. How do you learn this and use best practices?
I was first introduced to the agile methodology through an agile coach. Yeah, he came, but he was an Egyptian with a PhD from the United States in agile. And he came and he gave us a training and he coached a program. That's how I was initiated to the agile, if we can say.
For me, it's a bit different. We started agile. So we started to read about agile all of the team. So, and we started helping each other to understand agile. We started to apply different methodologies and practices until we were trying to reach the best practice of using agile. But we didn't use a coach or something to help us through agile.
Mm-hmm.
It was all self reading and self practicing.
How many people are on the team of the project that you're working on?
We're now 8 or 7, I think.
Mm-hmm. And is it?
So we have a team leader and 3 developers.
Okay.
And 1 DBA. And, me is a system analyst, mm-hmm. too. And Abir is a senior system analyst in the same team.
Okay. And what is a systems analyst in the context of how you're using that word? Because that word is kind of an overloaded term. You know, it can mean anything. It could be, you know, the person who is the bridge between the business and the project.
Yes, it's exactly that. So we contact the customer and get all the requirements from the customer and transform it into a terms that team can understand. And then we plan together the sprint and then we are delivering to the customer what he wants.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman from another Parallel Universe. Got to tell you about some of our things our sponsors are doing. They make this free podcast possible. If you're developing a new line of business application, you've probably tried the latest version of Silverlight. Now you can get even better results by combining the functionality in Silverlight 4 beta with some of the richness of the third-party controls from our friends at Telerik. They're the first vendors to offer native support for the Silverlight 4 beta and their RAD controls. They've got a new Silverlight 4 CTP suite of these controls. They let you tap into the framework's great potential. You get native right mouse click and all the new features of Silverlight. There's 38 controls that give you all these features. You can start building those compelling line of business applications right away. I encourage you to check those products out at Telerik.com/Silverlight. And, thank Telerik for supporting .NET Rocks, supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page at Facebook.com/Telerik. Now back to the show.
What kind of tools are you using to maintain a product backlog? Sometimes there are specific Scrum tools, and it can be something that you would buy and host, or it can be as simple as a list of post-it notes.
No, it's actually the Visual Studio team system. And, mm-hmm. of course, the information wall we use to – we put the post-it notes of the tasks, so we move it every day in the Scrum meeting.
Mm-hmm. So are you using some of the Scrum templates for team system, or have you put
Yes, it's Scrum for team systems. It's Contango.
Yeah.
Template, yeah.
I'm sorry, the word was Contango?
Contango, yeah.
Oh, it's the Contango Scrum templates for TFS.
Yes.
Hmm. Now, you guys are actually an outsource. You are outsourced, so you're on the other end of outsourcing, right? This is being driven from another country?
Yeah, so I work for Remy Kern. He's a company in the Netherlands, and all the customers are in the Netherlands.
So they're only an hour away, so effectively you don't have the kind of outsourcing problems that we have.
No, but other teams do have the they work for Canadian customers, so they have like seven hours difference the
really?
Time zone. Yeah.
Well, what are some of the challenges that you've dealt with? I mean, I think again speaking from the point of view of an American, which is the only point of view that I know at this point,
mm-hmm.
The Dutch and the Egyptians are as pretty different culture. I mean,
the Dutch are
is equally out there as I think Americans perceive them, the Arab world to be out there. What is that relationship like?
Yeah, the Dutch are pretty decent people, actually.
Well, I don't mean to imply they're not decent people, but, you know, they're extremely progressive, socially progressive individuals.
Yeah, but actually, the team I'm working with in the Netherlands are pretty helpful, mm-hmm. and we work together pretty well. So.
I don't think cultural differences interfere ever with the work in an IT community because we all have the basic same knowledge. We have the basic same thinking. We are all, focused on a very definite goal, which is to develop a good product that makes everybody happy,
mm-hmm.
that satisfies the needs of the client. So I don't see, We never get into cultural differences. That is never an issue. And I had the chance to work with an American client using an agile methodology. Mm-hmm. And the time difference was like 7 or 8 hours. And we just adjusted. We worked a little bit late, and the whole team started coming at noon and leaving at the evening. It's pretty much just logistics, but mm-hmm. never had any cultural issues interfere in the job. Never. Yeah.
And let me see if I can paraphrase a little bit. Would you say that it is the culture of being a programmer, or maybe even going so far to say that nerds are the same everywhere? You know what I'm saying?
I have to agree with that, although this is not what I meant. But yeah, because we have the same education, the same way of thinking. You have to admit that we think a little bit differently than everybody does. From an IT point of view. So we share a common base of understanding and knowledge that makes everything easier, even with clients. I mean, I had a client that has absolutely no idea about how IT works, but she just had faith in the team, and she would say what she wants, and we would tell her how the best way to do it, and we cooperated. Still, I think we were having a shared goal is what makes everything easier and drives everybody, as long as we are both committed and we have faith in each other.
That's a really positive attitude. Do you think that that's maybe an overly idealized attitude?
That has been my experience so far. I think absolutely there are different experiences, but can we say it's the majority? I think that's the exception.
Okay. What are some of the things that you've struggled with? If time zones are not too much trouble, and are you having any bandwidth issues or power issues? Do you do the work locally, or are you remoting into other people's machines? What's the general setup?
The development environment is in Egypt, and we deploy on a remote environment for the client to see. Mm-hmm. We don't have bandwidth issue or communications issue. We all use Skype or voice over IP. So we never faced any technical challenges in terms of technology. It's just the distance. And sometimes we have issues with the remote deployment, but it's usually fixed within a day or two.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the infrastructure of Egypt, which is there are other countries in North Africa that have a little bit more trouble with their infrastructure. You haven't got any trouble with your internet connections here.
No, I think Egypt is one of the most advanced countries in Africa and the Middle East in terms of infrastructure, because in other countries you will find this as a problem, but here the norm is having a DSL line in every house. So you can't face a problem like this here.
Pretty much improving now over time. So we have larger bandwidths, and the wireless connections are starting to be in every cafe or something.
Really?
So yeah, so it's starting to improve over time.
Now, I in the U.S., I'm in a unique but growing group of remote workers. I do a lot of work from home because I don't live in Seattle. Do you have the option to work from home if there's a sick child or something needs to be managed at home?
Yeah, yes, we do have that too.
And do you have internet straight to your home, or do you use 3G? How do you?
And we have internet. I think every home is having DSL line now.
So. I forgive me if I'm asking silly questions. You guys are looking at each other like, yeah, I mean, who doesn't have internet? We recently had a report in the U.S. that about 35% of people in the U.S. use dial-up.
No, I think no one uses dial-up here now.
Really?
Yeah. Especially in the IT community, because it's a must to go through college. You need to have an internet. So you have to have internet DSL line at home.
Really? So DSL is the minimum. There's no dial-up around here, at least for the IT people.
The
statistic I gave that just came out in the U.S. is 30 to 35%. This is the larger general population.
No, I think this is pretty reasonable. I think it might be a little less even in here, but in an IT community, the norm is DSL line.
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back a little bit to the concept of women in technology, are there any barriers when you choose to have kids, or if your husband is also working in the industry, or will you have to choose to stay home or not with the child, or will you have your grandparents take care of the kids?
There are a lot of solutions. I think most of the women in the IT community already are married and have kids. Mm-hmm. Usually the law here is to have a maternity leave for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And after that, a lot of women abuse their parents to babysit the child or put them in a nursery. Some companies now have nurseries in the company, like the GUC. The GUC have a nursery for the employees to have their kids.
The GUC here is the German University of Cairo.
Yeah, yeah. The German university uses the concept, and it's. I have to say it's going very well, and it's a very widespread idea. So no, we don't have that constraints unless you're not able to satisfy your child's need. That in that concept, you will probably put his best interest first.
Of course. So let me ask you this then. It seems like you guys, and I'm referring here to Egyptians, seem to have got this male-female engineering thing worked out. What can you help us? What can you tell us? What tips or advice? Because it seems like in the States, we don't do enough to encourage young women in technology, such that they may even decide that, you know, quote unquote, math is hard by the time they're 10. And I see this in my nieces, you know, and my I have two boys, but my family members that have daughters, that by the time the child is 12 or 13, if they haven't gotten hooked on science, the women, the young girls may have just given up. Is this something that needs to happen at the parent, at the parental level or at the school level?
I think, everyone shares a responsibility. The parents need to mainly focus with their kids that and never let them have the idea that they can do something, because evidently math is not hard for women, and
apparently not.
Yeah. So the concept propagated by the media and the stereotyping of women being unable to understand math is a myth.
Clearly.
So I think it's the responsibility of society as a whole to eliminate that myth, and foremost is the responsibility of schools and the parents, because if I tell my daughter, you will not understand math, she will never even try to. It's a mental barrier.
Exactly.
So if you eliminate that mental barrier and show role models of women in the technology, I think everything will go well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think parents maybe scare their daughters too much of science or something. That's why they don't even try. So they have to encourage them more into math and science. They may show them small parts of it when they are child, mm-hmm. and may make them encouraged to go into that business. So,
and I'm hearing both of you say that your parents very much encourage you to get into this field, even for you beyond art. Your dad was like, "Hey, focus on computers right now. You probably have to do art on the side." Do you have memories of them of your parents being interested in things that are science, watching science shows on TV and walking around and looking at bugs and all that kind of science?
Yeah. We were going to science museums, and my father took me, I think, a couple of times to science museum and showed me around. Mm-hmm. So he started to ask people about the computer business since I was 15 or something. Mm-hmm. So he prepares me for that since I was a teenager. He starts to ask people about that, and if it's good for me or if it's bad for me. So they start encouraging us pretty young.
Was your father in the business, or was he?
No, he's an English teacher.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Interesting. And what about your family?
I think same applies here. My parents are architects, both of them. But my father is pretty much into technology. I remember having an IBM PC at home early in the days when it was like these large floppy desks,
right.
And everything is running on DOS and the window's green and that's it.
Yeah.
I had this at home. I still have it, I think.
Yeah.
So, and he would just upgrade the system every time anything new comes, new games. And, I grew up having technology at home. Actually, I was very good at math, and my father noticed that when I was young. So he was always telling me, you gotta be an engineer because you're good at math. So I think that push into being something that is valuable and knowing that I excel in math and technologies are at home is made thinking of computer is an evident result of my education.
Well, it definitely sounds like you've kind of nailed it right there, which is you had technology around you all the time. You had encouragement all the time. Your parents identified that you had a skill.
Yeah.
And reminded you of that all the time. Hey, you can do this. This is interesting.
Yeah.
You have the power. And I think that that's definitely the formula for success, regardless of gender.
Absolutely. I was the math genius of the home. My sister was the science genius of the home. And she's a girl. So, no, we never have this, I don't know what to call it even, this limitation, this stereotype limitation of not being able to do something. Mm-hmm. I think it all comes to what they expect from you. If they expect you to be a doctor or an engineer, you will do your best to be a doctor or an engineer. But if the society as a whole treats you as less and expects less from you, or even not less, but a different model of what you should be as a woman, probably you're going to go naturally into that direction.
So this might be a weird question, but do you think that there is less, because there is less or visibly less, and the only way I can think about this is the less sexualization of women in public, that this enables you to be more of an equal? I mean, in the U.S., some young women might say, well, I want to be in a music video.
Yeah.
Or I want to go do dancing or other kind of things that are unique to their sex and possible only because they are women.
Yeah.
But because that's not something that is encouraged or out in the public, people are people, and there are, other than the hijab, there is really no gender distinction about what you can do. Would you think that that's the case?
Yes, but actually, they're pretty different, going in a music video and being an engineer. So they're pretty different.
They're extremely different careers.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is that idea that, well, math is hard. The only thing I can do is use my body to, my womanness to get a job.
Yeah.
Well, I'm only hearing brains. I'm hearing I can use my brain in this way, or I can use my brain in that way.
Yeah. It might be the case, but I think if women in the U.S. are encouraged more to that they can do it, to go into science and math, they definitely will do it.
I think I have to agree with your conclusion a little bit more than Lamise, because I think it's now built in their brains that they are this is the best I can do. This is wow. This is the ambition.
Well, the idea that I'm a woman first and I should look towards my womanliness to support myself. As opposed to my intellectual abilities.
In our culture, our sexuality is not the main at all. Is not the main asset we have at all, because our gender and our body, our whatever it is typically needed for family and for a husband and the kids, and that's why. Those are the people that will benefit from me being a woman, as a woman, typically.
Mm-hmm.
In the normal society, that is not the case. And I'm just a person that is a productive person, and
exactly.
This is what is required from me.
Well, and this is one of the things that I'm realizing, that even myself, as what I think of myself as a fairly forward-thinking and progressive individual, I still have these built-in Western stereotypes of women versus men. And I hope you won't be offended, Lamise, but I'll tell you this little bit of information. I've been interacting with you on email for 3 months as we've been organizing this, and I've had literally dozens of email conversations with you, and I didn't know that you were a woman until I arrived at the airport.
Oh.
And the man who picked me up at the airport handed me the telephone, and you said, hi, it's Lamise. And I said, in my mind, I went, what?
That's shocking, actually.
and I don't know. See, I don't know Lamise as a man's name or a woman's name.
Yeah,
so, of course,
understand.
If I was familiar with Arabic names, I would know. But it took me a moment, and I was actually a little ashamed of myself because I had any reaction at all. Because I'm so used to a proliferation of men in technology that I just, again, I apologize. I assumed that in an Arab country that the organizers would be men. And I'm not saying that I had the thought and set the thought. It was just a background assumption.
Yes, yeah. I understand.
And so, yeah, I landed in the airport, and the man said, oh, Lamis wants to talk to you. And I said, hello. And I expected hello. And I got you. So I that got me thinking about this topic and got me excited to sit down with you guys and chat with you about this today.
Yeah, and we have pretty much, women here have pretty much changes to go into technology. Actually, it's shocking me that you didn't realize that, but it's pretty common here.
But why should, and this is where I'm learning too, is that why should it matter? And I think that's the whole point and a good place to end our podcast today. Thank you very much, Lamis and Avir, for talking to me today here at Cairo University in Cairo, Egypt. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.